Once upon a time, there was a golf course called the Lido. It was down on the south shore of Long Island, just east of the Rockaways and just west of what would become Jones Beach. It had holes along the Atlantic Ocean in the south and holes along Reynolds Channel in the north. At the behest of C.B. McDonald, the father of American golf course architecture, the construction team dredged almost 2 million cubic yards of dirt and sand from the channel, all with horse and buggy. It was 1914, and it allowed McDonald a blank canvas upon which to craft the ideal golf course. It included all of the renowned templates. There was a Biarritz along the beach, a short with a thumbprint, an Alps hole, a Redan, a cape. There was an original McDonald design called the Channel Hole, with an island fairway as the most direct route to the green. The closing hole was designed by an unknown amateur architect, Dr. Alistair McKenzie, his first design in the United States coming from a submission to an open contest in Country Life magazine. It was a tri-option par four. There was a massive hotel with two artfully spired domes, tennis courts and cabanas along the beach. The hyperbole was abundant. Bernard Darwin called it the finest golf course in the world. Claude Harmon Sr. said it was the greatest golf course ever. And then, it disappeared.
Hey, welcome back to the Golfers Journal podcast, everyone. Brought to you by Titleist, the number one ball in golf. My name's Tom Coyne. I'm your host today, but I'm not alone in hosting this really exciting podcast we have to share with you. Great to have my good friend Brett Sergalis here with us. You know Brett, contributor to the Golfers Journal, author of a wonderful book that probably a lot of folks are reading now. It is our monthly selection in the book club on the Broken Tee Society, which if you haven't joined yet, that is our Discord server, our clubhouse in the clouds. You've been getting email about it. All you subscribers, get on there because we have cool things like book clubs. And that's where we're discussing, or soon we'll be discussing, Brett's golf's holy war. Very cool look at where golf's headed, where it's been. Also, done some wonderful work in the Golfers Journal, a great piece in number 17, The Hard Truth About Lido. Thanks so much for coming on, man.
Oh yeah, Tom, it's my pleasure. It was fun to write the story and it's going to be fun to talk about. It was fun to do this podcast.
It's going to be fun. Before we get into Lido, which if you don't know it, it's truly one of the great sort of lost treasure stories of golf, right? I mean, it would be sort of the equivalent of golf's Holy Grail, really, aside from the fact that we know where it was, unlike that Holy Grail, and we know what happened to it, but it is that great lost golf course, and your treatment of it is pretty extraordinary. We'll get into that, but along with being a contributor and Lido enthusiast, Brett, you're a bit of a gamer here. Scratch handicap, been known to wreak havoc around the Met section with your fine play. And also, Brett, we know you're a member of Team Titleist. Do you game the Pro V1 or the Pro V1X?
I am a firm proponent of the Pro V1X.
Oh, wow. But
I don't think you can go wrong.
You can't go wrong. I would have taken it for a Pro V1 guy. But that's, you just don't know until you ask somebody.
That's right.
The latest generation, you know, that hopefully all of us have been enjoying this past season, you know, of the Pro V1 and Pro V1X. It's got the speed, precision, and accuracy. I'm actually been flirting with the left dot, which has been fun. I got my hands on a couple of those in the Titleist lexicon, the left dot or the left dash. That means left means less. So a little less spin, you know, since the Pro V1 started, all the iterations and generations of it have just gotten better and better and better as they continue to improve. And again, you know, deliver the best ball in golf. So big thanks to Titleist for the continued support of the podcast and the magazine. Along with big thanks to Linksoul, FootJoy, Oakley, Links and Kings, and Scotty Cameron, our other partners at the Golfers Journal. Brett, where do you play your golf? We've established that you play in the New York, Jersey area.
I'm a Long Island boy, so I'm up here on the North Shore. I play at a fun little place called Plandome. But I bounce around, play as much golf as many different places as possible. So very lucky in the Met section. One of the great things about playing tournaments up here is that the venues are second to none. Sorry, Philly, but they are second to none.
I would say second to one. And that would be, of course, the Philadelphia section. But, you know, thinking about where one belongs and where one plays golf, and speaking of jumping around to great golf courses, if you look at the Golfers Journal, at the schedule of events that we have coming up this year at the Golfers Journal for our subscribers, you almost think, like, what's the point of even belonging to a club, right? I mean, if you want to play the best courses in America, you're going to have the chance to. We are slowly sort of leaking out the dates for the, you know, on our calendar of events. A couple exciting ones we can announce. You've probably seen, speaking of Lido, our Lido preview at Sand Valley. The event last year, 4th of July weekend at Sand Valley, was an absolute blast. We got to go out and walk around the golf course, and now we're actually going to play 13 of the holes. I mean, that's how early this preview is, that we're only there's only 13 holes finished that we're going to be playing. So definitely getting to play Tom Doak's version of the Lido in Wisconsin before anyone else. And then also our Mid Pines retreat, going to Mid Pines, Southern Pines, Pine Needles in April. Man, that is one I am not going to miss. I absolutely love Pine Needles. Used to go there as a kid. That goes on sale. Mark your calendars, the 9th of December at noon. That one will sell out pretty quickly. So now, Brett, let's get to you. You joined us to talk about more than exciting, amazing things going on.
Well, I don't know. Journal. December 9th, I'm writing down, because I've never been to that that whole area, Pine Needles. So I might be in for that one.
I mean, that is just a tour de force. When you go Mid Pines, Southern Pines, Pine Needles, that's like, you know.
Might have to mark it off now.
Mark it off. And you know, we don't play favorites, but we'll see if we can squeeze you in. You've done some good stuff. So again, not here to talk about your game so much, but here to talk about this amazing podcast you've helped produce for us. I love when we can do stuff like this. You know, it's great to do interviews and conversations, but here, you know, to really do a docupod, a narrative with your voice and the voice of other people helping to tell the story of not just one Lido, but really three Lidos. Who else did you get involved in the podcast, and how did they feel? How was it to get them talking some Lido?
Yeah, you know, I had already gone down this route when I was writing the story. So I had already approached some people about the Lido, the first being Gil Hance, who, as we all know, is as smart as they come in the business and as articulate. So he adds a really interesting voice to this. And Brian Schneider, who was spent a lot of time on the ground at Sand Valley building that golf course too. So, you know, it was really fun to look at this from a different angle. From my experience at the golf course, it still exists, which I knew since I was a kid, because I didn't always belong to a club and I spent a lot of time playing public golf. And that was one of the places we played quite a bit in the winter. And I remembered playing it in the winter, and I still go down now because they keep the greens open. So it's fun. But yeah, you know, so I brought in Gil and I brought in Brian, and they, you know, they're very thoughtful about the topic. This is a golf course. This is a piece of history that people that really care about the game have always thought about and thought about deeply, because it's the only really great golf course to ever disappear in this country, you know? So, you get people to think about it. And there, with such a revitalized interest in golf course architecture, it's really it's perfect timing for these new ones to be built and kind of to think back on what was there, you know, a century ago.
And perfect timing for a podcast just like this, giving us a chance to take a deep dive into the story around Lido's past and, amazingly, Lido's future. So, Brett, thanks so much for taking the time for doing this. Thanks for all the work that you put into what we're about to hear, which is sort of more like a show or a program than me interviewing someone off the cuff there. So let's dive into some history and some mystery. Brett Zergalis, take it away.
became this almost mythical golf course, you know, kind of like Atlantis. It was there and it's no longer there, but it was held up in its time as a standard of greatness and what was achievable.
That's the voice of Gil Hance, who, along with being one of the world's leading golf course architects, is also an articulate historian of the game. For goodness sake, this is the guy who lived in Donald Ross's house in Pinehurst while he restored the number 4 course. So Hance was one of the first people I called when I started thinking about the Lido for a story in Golfer's Journal number 17. There has been such a revitalized interest in this historical anomaly that Hance even built a tribute course in Thailand. And Tom Doak is building a faithful recreation for the Kaiser family in Wisconsin, right next to Sand Valley. Believe it or not, there's even a course still called the Lido on the south shore of Long Island, adjacent to where the old course was. Don't worry, a lot more on all those later. But the seeds of interest were sown for Hance while he was in grad school at Cornell, studying the works of Mackenzie and finding the submission in country life.
I started wondering, well, what is this Lido? And where did this whole thing come from?
Things got a little more interesting when Hance got out of school and joined the team at Doak's Renaissance Golf Design. There, they would discuss different hypothetical scenarios. When it came to flat pieces of land, Doak always held the Lido as the example.
Tom would frequently say, okay, if we had a dead flat piece of ground, what would you do? As a younger architect, you know, you don't frequently get these great sites. And so he talked an awful lot about Riviera and, you know, the Barranca concept and how that could be applied. But he also talked a lot about Lido and how it was basically created from nothing on a flat site and, you know, all the sand pumped in. That's really where the conversations came from. It was, okay, if we were ever tasked with a dead flat site with not a lot of interest, what could we possibly do? Tom obviously never saw it with his own eyes, but I think he had thoroughly researched it and had envisioned what it would and could look like. And we talked about the different holes. But I think it was really just more focused on the creativity of these template holes and how you would create them out of thin air instead of finding them in the landscape. You know, a lot of the sites that they were, McDonald and Rayner were fortunate to work on, they just found these holes or they had to enhance the landscape in order to create them, but they didn't have to create the landscape. And so I think it ultimately, you know, focused around how do you create these holes out of thin air.
It wasn't so much out of thin air that the dream of recreating the Lido survived. A man named George Botto was at the helm. Having run a family dry cleaning business in New Jersey, Botto turned to golf history after retirement, specifically the history of C.B. McDonald and Seth Rayner. He authored the definitive McDonald biography, really the only one, titled The Evangelist of Golf. He was also in the midst of a book on Rayner when he died in 2014 at the age of 83. Botto was a go-to guy during a time when golf course architecture was gaining popularity. He helped Hance restore some classic McDonald Rayner courses, including the Creek Club, Sleepy Hollow, and West Hampton. But the big call came when Mike Kaiser asked Botto to take a look at a piece of land at the Bandon Dunes Resort on the Oregon coast to see if it was possible to recreate the Lido.
It was really along the lines of the Lido and George unearthing a lot of research. I think I still have his folder on the Lido.
Turns out the land in question was just a little too interesting. Instead, Botto teamed with Doak and Jim Urbina to build what is now known as Old McDonald, the third course at Bandon. It's a tribute to the design legacy of McDonald and Rayner, rather than any specific recreation. But that had whet the appetite for what could be, if only there was the right opportunity.
When we visited the site for the first time, we realized that there was nothing there. I mean, it was an existing golf course that had been let go, and there was nothing really worth saving. And so we started to think, okay, what do we do? So this now harkens back to those conversations early on with Tom of, all right, do we do a series of barrancas running through it and, you know, make them interesting and give some character to that? Or how do we do these things? What ideas do we come up with? And it just dawned on me. So, well, why don't we try and do the Lido?
The piece of land in question was in Thailand, about 40 minutes east of Bangkok. Hance had been recommended for the job by Bill Kaur and Ben Crenshaw, who had worked with the owner at Yakamoto Country Club in Japan. With the hope of creating something entirely unique for the region, Hans's suggestion of doing the Lido was embraced by the owner.
It was a chance for him to display some of the best examples of classic architecture and a chance for us to build something very, very different.
This was 2018, so Hans went to Botto's daughter, Pam, and asked for her dad's folder on the Lido. From there, he was able to approximate scale and do his best in creating a tribute. It was a difficult task. For one, it's not exactly deep, sandy soil in Thailand.
We have a piece of land that in order to move any dirt on it, we had to put concrete piers in the ground so that the features wouldn't sink.
The piece of property also did not have the same footprint as the one on Long Island, the one that stretched from the ocean beach to the channel. But the sequence of holes is the same, from the Biarritz being number 8 and the Redan being number 16. The back nine's currently open for member play, and the whole course is set to have a grand opening in January 2022. Hans chose the moniker Ballyshere because that was the name of McDonald's Southampton estate, which looked out over Bull's Head Bay onto arguably his greatest creation, the National Golf Links of America. The house still stands, now owned by Michael Bloomberg. It can be seen from the fourth tee box, poking through the trees as an accent in the background of one of the great Redans of the world.
Frankly, it's much simpler just to build something you think is really cool, but to try and replicate something as precisely as possible is a lot of work.
That's Brian Schneider, a partner now at Renaissance Golf Design with Doak. He has spent a lot of time on the ground in Wisconsin, where the Kaisers are building another golfing metropolis approaching the scale of Bandon Dunes. Sand Valley already has its namesake course, designed by Kaur and Crenshaw and opened in 2017. A year later, Mammoth Dunes was opened, designed by Scotsman David McLay Kidd. There's also a 17-hole short course called the Sandbox, another Kaur Crenshaw design with some template holes thrown in just for fun. The goal was to keep expanding. Bandon does have 5 full courses and a short one. The next step at Sand Valley was going to be a course called Sedge Valley, but the pandemic put a halt to that. Then a new idea was batted around. Instead of building another public resort course, how about the semi-private model? It was a different financial undertaking, but one that made sense. And when the idea of doing the Lido came up again, everyone got even more excited. Soon the flat plot of sandy land across the street was purchased, and rumors started flying. Michael Kaiser and Tom Doak were actually doing it. They were recreating the Lido. And they weren't calling it a new build. They were calling it a restoration.
When Michael first approached Tom Doak about being involved in the project, Tom only agreed under the stipulation that we would try to recreate the original as accurately as possible.
Luckily for the team, there was a lot of research available on the course, from plasticine models to aerial photographs to news stories aplenty. And there was a man in Chicago named Peter Flory, an amateur golf historian and a digital designer. He spent 3 years building an interactive model of the course. It was so good that his creation was featured in the video game PGA Tour 2K21. It was also used for guidance by Doak and his team, proving incredibly helpful with all the nuances of the property. They plugged topographical information into GPS-controlled bulldozers. According to Schneider, the undulations of the fairways and greens were then able to be reproduced to within an inch. Normally, Doak is the architect and his team executes his plan. And it can change on the fly. But that was not the way they looked at this project.
To have the opportunity to essentially build a golf course for McDonald. I mean, that's how it feels. And, you know, in spite of Tom's involvement and Tom's role in this is really complicated as well. But I do feel like McDonald is the architect of this project. And we're trying as hard as we can to interpret his wishes and his design and to implement that as accurately as we can.
About the complicated part of Doak's involvement. Just like with Hans's course in Thailand, this piece of land is not the same as the one McDonald had on Long Island. So the famous channel hole will have the internal water, but it had been bordered on the right by Reynolds Channel. That will be replicated by a stretch of broken land, possibly marked as lateral hazard to replicate the same penalty as the channel. Same for the right of the Biarritz, which had been the ocean beach. Maybe more importantly, the original Lido was only on 115 acres. That was tight even for 1914. A lot of the bunkering was used on more than one hole, like the greenside bunker on number 5 being used as a fairway bunker for number 13. In the name of safety, and now with more land, the 5th green is a little farther away. But those bunkers were recreated in the 13th fairway, so it plays exactly the same as McDonald intended.
Every time you separate one hole from another, sometimes it has to be east-west, sometimes it's north-south, and fitting all those pieces together is not the simplest thing to do. And that was a puzzle that Tom solved pretty early on in the process. And the intricacy of that wasn't something I really appreciated until we started putting the holes together in the field. And pretty amazed at how clever he was.
And still this feels like McDonald's project, which brings Schneider to a place of historical reverence that doesn't happen, that can't happen with new designs.
There certainly is an emotional kind of spiritual element to this. And it's you know, again, the recreation of the Lido is something that's fascinated golfers for decades. And to be a part of the project is really exciting. And my esteem for McDonald as a designer has grown exponentially through this process. The National Golf Links has always been my favorite golf course in this country. And I think the complexity of that golf course is just stunning. But I'm convinced that no other architect would have gone to the lengths that McDonald went to include just layers and layers of detail and interest in what he created at the Lido. It's really fascinating, and I'm just blown away by his genius.
How about this for layers of interest? Schneider said there are portions of the golf course that feel like St. Andrews, and he thinks that was McDonald's intent. The amateur psychologist in me wants to say he's projecting. But you know what? It makes a lot of sense.
A couple points that I find interesting. Number one, you know, when people talk about Chicago Golf Club, that golf course was routed clockwise, famously because McDonald played a slice, and by routing it clockwise, all of the out of bounds is on the left. And it's the opposite at the Lido. You know, the front nine at Lido makes a big counterclockwise loop around the property, and the back nine largely makes it kind of a tighter counterclockwise loop, but usually the trouble's on the right, not unlike St. Andrews. And as a result of that routing, a lot of the holes are kind of paired together. You know, every hole in the front nine kind of has a partner on the back nine. So the first and the 10th holes play adjacent to one another, the second mm-hmm. and the 11th. And that part of the property really feels like St. Andrews, especially the not only are the 2nd and the 11th adjacent, but the 17th is also adjacent. And the fairways on all three of those holes connect. And it even continues on towards the 15th and over to the 13th. But those three holes, kind of 2, 11, and 17, are just a massive field of fairway that must be almost 300 yards wide, 250 yards wide, with a lot of kind of sharp, you know, fascinating undulation and bunkers seemingly scattered everywhere, and there's blindness, and it just has that feel, and massive greens. It feels very much like the old course to me. It's one of my favorite parts of the property. It's really beautiful in a different way and just feels like the best kind of golf.
Schneider and the team essentially left Wisconsin for the winter with 13 holes shaped and grassed, already very close to playable. They will finish the rest of the work in this spring, and the hope is for a grand opening a year from then, in the spring of 2023. Golfers staying at the Sand Valley Resort will have access to tee times, likely during the week. The rest will be available for member play. Hans is already aware that there will be comparisons between the two Lidos, even if that's not entirely fair.
Well, I would say by everything that they're talking about, theirs is an accurate, fully accurate representation of the original Lido. Ours is more of a tribute to the Lido.
What Hans would like is to steer people away from ranking which is better, because that's not the point of either project.
I'm not worried about how it compares. I'm just excited to see it, because I think it's going to be an amazing statement for golf course architecture.
I was one of the people swept up in the revitalized interest in golf course architecture. Around 2010 or so, I began spending many late nights reading Golf Club Atlas. The templates of McDonald and Rayner were easy to understand. Or, as Schneider said,
it's the kind of entry point. It's the oaky Chardonnay of golf architecture.
I eventually understood the Lido and its significance in the game. And I began to understand why it was so important that it disappeared.
It's the lost continent. It's the lost golf course that everyone in its day pointed to as, you know, sort of the pinnacle of design. I'm not sure I don't think they focused as much on rankings back then, but I think it was, you know, spoken in the same language or same breath as Pine Valley and National Golf Links, and really held up as a very high standard. And for, I mean, if you think about that in the context of the greatest golf courses in this country, it's the only one that I can think of that's gone.
So now, all of a sudden, there are two of them. Boy, that happened fast.
It feels like golf architecture has been building to this point. Golfers are certainly more aware of architecture now than they have been in my lifetime, thanks to Golf Club Atlas and so many great podcasts and magazines. The younger generation of golfers, it's something that appeals to them for whatever reason.
The rumors of the Lido's rebirth were stoked when Schneider started posting some pictures online. One was an old ad for the Lido, and one was a picture of a baseball field. I knew the field. It was part of Long Beach High School. Just east of that was a public golf course that I had played relatively frequently as a teenager. It was named Lido Golf Club, and underneath the logo was a date, 1914. Growing up, I knew there had been another golf course before that one with the same name, but I didn't know much more. What I did know was that the greens were as slow as the afternoon pace of play, and there was an abundance of goose shit. I also knew there was a couple holes on Reynolds Channel that were really pretty. There was also the pesky 16th hole with an island fairway shaped like the letter Y. People either loved it or hated it. I thought it was cool. I had never seen anything like it. You got to walk over two wood bridges. Turns out that when Robert Trent Jones built the course in 1948, that hole was his tribute to the channel hole. In 2003, it topped a list in the New York Post for local golf holes that needed to be blown up with dynamite. The Lido that I knew was not the Lido of legend. Very few people who played down there knew about one of the great golf courses in history. Lido Golf Club, to me, became a fun place to play in the winter. They never aerated, at least I never saw them aerate. So those slow greens quickly became the best around when the rest of Northeast golf was hibernating. The wind whipped off the water, sometimes to extremes, and when the marshy soil got a few good freezes, the ground could play fast and firm. One day with the wind behind me, I hit my Olimar forward onto the green of the 358-yard par 4 third. This winter, I flighted a good 2-iron and hit a good 6-iron, short of the green. There was something vaguely Scottish about the place on a quiet, warm winter day. It was built on land just east of where the old golf course was, abutting the channel in the north and never going south of Lido Boulevard, which used to split the old course like an equator. The hotel still stands, now beachfront condos, and the spired domes are a good aiming point for the tee shot on 18. That's normally a good time to bring up the history. This way, if your playing partner is bored to tears, everyone can just putt out and walk away. It's strange how history can be so close and yet feel so far away. Gil Hans grew up about 25 miles east of Lido in a town called Babylon. His family used to drive by Lido on their way to visit his grandparents in Jamaica, Queens. Hans also used to play high school sports against schools east of him in the Hamptons.
I'm sure drove by Shinnecock and National and those places all the time and had no clue, you know, what I was looking at or not looking at, because I probably wasn't even looking out the window.
As for playing the Lido golf course that's currently there?
I have not, no.
How about you, Brian?
Yeah, I've not played it, but I did take a walk around.
The channel hole is now under Long Beach High School, a hulking concrete building raised on stilts with ground-level parking. I used to hear stories about that school. where bad kids would roll apples on tabletops so as not to break the skin but turn the inside to mush, and then they would toss them like grenades at the overhanging faculty lookout in the cafeteria. The green would have been just on the other side of the school, where last year a house was being built with floor-to-ceiling windows for better views of the channel. I sent a picture of its construction to Schneider, and he responded, "Do you think the homeowners know or care?" For the first time in my life, this past winter, I went to go look at where the old golf course was. There was a wispy, wet snow falling as I pulled into Lido Beach West Town Park. A few other cars were parked there. What were they doing there? What was I doing there? I pulled up a screenshot of the old course laid over the current map. It was an image used in a segment about the Lido on Golf Channel that aired during the 2018 PGA Championship, not too far away at Bethpage. I followed the map to the end of the parking lot. Then I drove down a gravel path to a small opening in the dunes. I parked and got out. There on the ground was a memorial, with stones and shells scattered in a semicircle. Next to some frozen flowers was a plaque for First Lieutenant Michael L. Lacalzi, United States Marine Corps. He was 24 years old when he died in Iraq in 2006. I had played golf with his twin brother Greg just 2 weeks prior. It's strange how history can sometimes be so palpable. I walked past the memorial to my friend's brother and out to the beach on a new wood walkway. To the right would have been the 18th green, from where you oddly had to walk around the 9th green to get back to the elegant hotel. To the left, the dunes created a little alleyway, rising on either side with gentle humps and dells in between. That was the Biarritz. Only about 10 years after it was built, the one hole that played along the ocean was battered by a storm and did not return. The Depression did a number on the resort, and then World War II closed it down entirely when the Navy took over for training. It never reopened. Now there are rows of houses lined up on tight streets with names like Fairway, Bunker, Redan, Eden. And there were still the dunes. I walked out, carefully avoiding the newly planted bitter panicum grasses and the half-buried fences, there to mitigate erosion. I wanted to know what it felt like to stand in a place that a century ago was so revered. I squinted and thought about flighting a 3-iron to the front of the Biarritz, hoping it was firm enough to get through the swale into the back pin. I walked closer to where the green was, hoping to find a discarded Haskell or maybe a Varden flyer. I thought I saw one, too, in a flat area where seagulls dropped clamshells en masse. But it turned out to be a ping-pong ball, sitting next to a faded red plastic cup and an empty Bud Light can. Deeper in the dunes, down in a swale that could have provided comfort to sheep on a cold Scottish day, was an old, faded Budweiser tall boy. Shelter, it turns out, comes in many shapes and sizes. Schneider had done the same walk a few weeks earlier.
It's a strange feeling walking around there, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
So you definitely get the feeling that there are ghosts roaming around that property out there.
It's easy to wonder if the ghost would recognize what is being built in Wisconsin and in Thailand. Would they like it? Would they care? Is it ever really possible to recreate history? Maybe not, but it sure is fun to try.